Hello, and welcome to the Should I Go See It podcast, where every other Friday we take a deeper dive into the one-sentence reviews on shouldigoseeit.com. This week we'll be discussing Dune Part 2, Imaginary, Kung Fu Panda 4, and Love Lies Bleeding. I'm your host, Bill George. With me today, as always, AJ Rebecca and super producer Craig Stanton.
Hello and good evening.
Yeah!
Gentlemen, hello.
Hi.
I feel like we just did this, right?
Yeah, we're on a not every other week. We've been on a week-to-week basis for a little
Fresh
bit
Fresh off a bonus episode. We're really hitting our stride.
Hope everyone enjoyed that interview last week.
I enjoyed it.
That was great.
That's all that really matters, right? If we enjoyed it.
Good times.
What's new? What's going on, AJ?
Not much. Same old. Not much has changed since we last spoke. You and I saw a movie together, which we're going to talk about, Dune 2. The 1K live event is going hot and heavy. You'll give an update on that. And then I watched a few oldie but goodies in the last week, which we can talk about as well. But why don't we start with, I know it's top of everyone's mind, 6E 1K live event. What do we got?
Extravaganza.
The live event extravaganza.
Ooh.
Tickets are on sale now, but let me tell you, they're going fast. As of this recording, and by the time you hear this, there are less than 10 seats left.
Whoa.
So very limited seat availability right now. So if you are interested in going, buy your tickets now. You can go to shouldigoseeit.com, and there's a link in the header, or you can go to @shouldigoseeit on Instagram, and there's a link in the bio.
Few questions about that. Are you just saying it's sold out just to like get a flood of interest? Or are we really?
No.
Okay.
No.
Legit.
This is not. I'm not trying to goose the interest. I track it regularly, and there are sub 10 tickets available.
Love that. Second question from a bookkeeping and accounting standpoint. Is early bird? We're done, right? Early bird is through. We're down full price, Phil?
Correct. So,
you missed it, folks.
Thank you for all of our early bird specials, all the folks that showed their support as soon as we put the tickets on sale. So they lucked out with a little bit of a less expensive ticket. But tickets, again, we still have some available now at the normal rate. So please pick those up.
And I got to say, still a hell of a deal.
Great deal.
Regardless.
You got the movie. You got the popcorn. You got the soft drink. You got the podcast. You got a lot for whatever we're charging, $40.
Yeah, and
no
trailers.
Not only that,
there's no trailers.
No trailers. That's 23 minutes of your time.
But what we're gonna do? I was gonna wait until the night of, but I think everyone deserves this.
Oh God,
I got a pair of fucking stilettos and a jacket for Bill, and he's gonna do the Nicole Kidman live for us before.
One last time.
One last time.
Also, in good news around the event, the movie that we're watching on Sunday, May 5th at 6:30 p.m. at AMC Framingham, the movie we're watching, The Fall Guy, premiered at South by Southwest recently to some positive reviews.
Oh, that's
looking
good.
Pretty wow. Good. I saw a couple headlines that all seem to enjoy it as a fun action romp.
Grain of salt. Grain of salt. Because you know all those people are just happy to be there. They're all microdosing mushrooms.
Gosling is there.
They're all sweaty from being, you know, outside all day. And they just want to be in a cool air-conditioned facility.
Right.
So,
but even so, I saw a headline from a particular publication that is not usually very friendly in general.
Ooh.
And they liked it as well. So some promising stuff there. So
we feel pretty good that it's not a complete pile of shit.
Right.
Would that be fair to say?
Yes.
Like that. Yep. The pile of shit meter is low. Bill, for things that I've watched, when Maria was on, we kind of stayed on after the pod and we just chit-chatted about movies and stuff. We talked about Ocean's 11 and I was like, you know what? I'm going to watch Ocean's 11 again.
Can't beat it.
My goodness. My goodness gracious.
Perfect movie.
It's so good.
It really is.
It's so good. Yep. Craig, have you seen that? You seem like a guy who didn't watch that.
Ocean's 11, which is the original Ocean's.
It is not the original Ocean's. It's the first remake of the Ocean's movie.
What? The one with Brad Pitt and George Clooney.
Well, yeah, but Craig doesn't know about the Frank Sinatra Rat Pack movie from the 60s.
They made a Rat Pack. It was the original.
Yeah. No, I'm Irish. So, I have seen Ocean's 11 with the good crew.
Yes. Oceans, okay. A classic, a go-to, a standby. What else do you watch?
In the trailers of Dune, they showed the new Twisters trailer.
Yeah.
And I looked at Bill as soon as it ended. I was like, Paxton's dead. We got a good chuckle in the theater.
Although the trailers in that theater when we were seeing it in Dolby Cinema was so loud, it was probably more like, Paxton's dead! It wasn't really whispering.
It was like you were in a Twister, except...
Yeah, holy shit, that movie was loud.
I walked out of that theater and it felt like I was just... Someone threw flashbang grenades at me for fucking 3 hours. It was just like...
AJ drove straight from Assembly Square directly to Mass Eye and Ear and checked himself in for an emergency appointment.
Loud.
So that's what I watched. Boys, anything?
Everything I watched will be featured later in this episode.
Let me tell you what. I recently discovered that Apple TV Plus has a bunch of just like a random selection of movies available to stream. I don't know whether they changed the interface and that sort of aspect of the offerings has risen higher than it used to be, and I just happened to notice it for the first time, or if it's actually something new that they're doing. But I've watched a couple cool movies that are stuff I've seen before, just like fun rollbacks. I watched Catch Me If You Can.
Great.
The other day, which was really, really great. Good I one. Watched the first remake Jurassic Park with Chris Pratt and BDH.
Jurassic World.
Fallen World.
Jurassic World. No. The first of the new trilogies, which was it was fine.
Kingdom of...
It was just Jurassic World.
Was it fine, though? Was it?
Blues World.
Like, aggressively fine, just, like, fun and on to have in the background. But the list of movies that they actually have is, like, kind of half decent.
Yeah,
for sure. Just freebies that, if you have Apple TV Plus, you can check out. So, yeah.
Love that.
I saw that
Catch Me If
well.
You Can. What a film.
Oh,
other
so
than
good.
Tom Hanks's Boston accent, but you kind of get used to it.
Yeah, but it was...
He's sort of doing the Maya Quimby. You know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, he sounds like Kevin Costner in 13 Days.
I'm not familiar with that, but yeah, he's doing the Quimby.
Okay.
It's a hard Quimby. Yeah.
Don't know what that is, but I know Quimby and I know sure. JFK.
This is a movie podcast, right?
Let's go to in the news. Bill, your favorite day of the year just occurred this past Sunday. The 96th Annual Academy Awards, which they're not calling that anymore. They're just called the Oscars, were this past weekend, celebrating the year in cinema. The broadcast started an hour earlier than usual and made some adjustments to the format. First, Bill, what do you think of the broadcast? And two, what do you think of the ultimate winners?
So the winners piece, there's not much to say. They had a zillion award shows leading up to this that were all pretty consistent. So there were no real surprises, which made the awards themselves kind of a snooze fest. So I don't really have much to go on for the winners. I was happy for all of them. I think they were all deserving.
Asterisk. I'm going to call an asterisk a bullshit play on that.
What?
You said you were live tweet. You texted me more in 3 hours than I think my wife has texted me in 12 years being together. You thought Lily Gladstone was a fucking
lock. Okay, so that was the one surprise, was Emma Stone over Lily Gladstone. But even Emma had won earlier in the award season. So, and again, both of them were great.
Okay.
So still snooze fest. Awards, snooze fest. Let's talk about the broadcast.
Let's do it.
First of all, moving to the fully branding the show as just Oscars, air quotes, I hate it. Like, they're trying to be hip, cool, and they're not. You're not selling soda. Like, if there's one place to stand on ceremony, it's this.
Wow.
Like, lean into the prestige. Lean into the history. It's the 96th Annual Academy Awards. Mm-hmm. Like, so that bothered me from the jump.
Sure.
The other thing that bothered me, and you got to give me some space on this one.
Runway's yours.
This included maybe the worst presentation of Best Picture ever. Like, disaster. Ruined moment. Let me take you through it, AJ. Let me take you through it.
Wait, before you dive in, you do remember the time that Lockheed Martin or whatever it is screwed up the envelope and they announced the wrong winner for Best Picture. You're saying this was worse than that?
Arguably. I could make that argument.
I think there's a bias here, but okay, go for it. Okay. Runway's yours.
So we get to the end of the night, and for some reason, the shambling corpse of Al Pacino comes on from stage right.
Oh, boy.
He gets to the mic. He says something about Shakespeare. I have no idea what he's talking about. He's a crazy old man. Now, they've been showing clips of each Best Picture nominee as they transition back from commercials throughout the night, which is fine. But this is usually where the presenter says, you know, let's take one last look at the nominees. They reel off the rattle, you know, all the names. And then the presenter says, and the Oscar goes to, and names it. Like, yes. That's how this works.
Never watched the Oscars in my life, but that sounds appropriate.
Completely yeah. normal.
That's yep. what should have. That is what should have happened.
Yep. That's it's in my brain. Happened. That's how I'm projecting it. Yep.
This time, however, they do not repeat any of the names of the nominees. The producers apparently made that choice. Pacino later clarified he didn't mess up. They didn't do it. So that's a bad producer call, but whatever. And then he stumbles for the envelope and then announces it like this.
This is the time for the last award of the evening. And it's my honor to present it. 10 wonderful films were nominated, but only one will take the award for Best Picture. And I have to go to the envelope for that. And I will. Here it comes. And Maria, I see Oppenheimer. Yes. Yes, Emma Thomas, Charles Gordon. What
happened? So
go to bed, go back to bed, Grandpa.
You can hear the couple seconds of confusion because it just sounds like the ramblings of a senile man on a park bench. Like, this is the biggest moment of the night. It's the biggest moment of these people's lives. And it's ruined by a simple-minded geezer. He should have said, and the Oscar goes to. For Christ's sake, it's the 96th Annual Academy Awards, and this ghoul has been at every single one of them. Not to mention, Geriatrics fucked up Moonlight's announcements, too. For the Moonlight and La La Land. Stop using the olds to announce Best Picture. Like, you have a host. Use them. Close the show and with the host giving the last award so you have some level of control so you're not randomly picking some old person every year.
Folks, after you're done listening to this, just call your grandparents and tell them that you love them because, I mean, it's equal parts sad and hilarious that happened. I think it's kind of funny. Like, it makes for good talk around the water cooler. Though I'm unemployed and the water cooler is just me yelling at my dogs. So, yeah, I don't know.
I think it was an unmitigated disaster.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
I have other thoughts on the show, AJ, but I needed to make sure I got that out.
No, you did. And I hope you feel better about that.
I do.
Let me just interject a few things and then I'll let you kind of wrap this up.
Sure.
Jimmy Kimmel is very unlikable.
Yeah, not good.
He's a very unlikable person. And the weird thing about the monologue, which I know he doesn't write, he probably says that he had a part in it, but they pay fucking Bruce Valanche millions of dollars to actually write that monologue. How do you go from like PG funny dad jokes that actually were the funniest things to just like kind of over the top, crude, weird sex jokes and Holocaust jokes all into one? And it's like, what am I like? At least when Ricky Gervais would do an award show, you know that like it's shock and awe from start to finish. And you know that what the tone's going to be. This was just absolutely terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Yeah, I agree. He did like a couple jokes about the length of the broadcast, which always make me laugh, or the length of movies this year that I thought was kind of funny. Like some simple stuff like that, which is what it should be. Just kind of poking fun at the industry, not in a like ridiculous way to embarrass people in front of you. But just a couple, like, you know, zingers, light zingers, fine. But then you're right. There was a lot of crude stuff. There was a lot of political stuff. There was just some disrespectful stuff. Like, it was just not enjoyable to me.
Yeah.
And he ruined the montage, like the beginning montage that they did of, like, you know, the year in film, I thought was actually very well done. And then they end with him joining a scene from Barbie, which kind of goes back to Billy Crystal used to put himself in all the movies as part of his shtick, which if you're going to do that shtick, fine. But all he did was show up for one scene in Barbie and then he's on the stage. So it wasn't like they were going to do that actual bit. They just did one part from it, which again, kind of, I thought ruined the impact of that montage.
Which probably goes to the thing that you're ready to talk about, which I think you've been saying for a few years now. So what is your, what is the Bill George, BG2, how do you fix the Oscars forever?
Okay, a couple things. One, no host. You eliminate the host, you do a montage of the year in film, and then the PA announcer does the heavy lifting and says, now to present our first award is the star of such and the star of such.
Go.
And that's it. And then people come on stage, they do it. You eliminate that awkwardness, you eliminate the open monologue, you eliminate all the bits in between. So all that saves time. Because this started an hour early, and it still lasted 3.5 hours. Like, you can get this show sub 3 hours easily. So that's one, no host. Two, the entire show acts as an advertisement for movies to begin with. So the entire show should be sponsored commercial-free by movie studios. Now, it's a live show. They need to take breaks. So instead of normal commercials, they should do first-run world premiere trailers as the two-minute commercial breaks.
I fucking love that.
Because then, not only are you going to be talking to your core audience, which is moviegoers, if the non-cinephile person knows that the only way to get the first look at the next MCU movie, John Wick movie, whatever it is to watch the Oscars, they will. Because every commercial break is going to be a new trailer you're seeing for the first time, and it becomes the place to show new movie trailers. So the studios can all show their wares. You know what I mean?
Love that. Keep going. You're cooking. I'm going to let you cook. Keep cooking.
Then, for Best Picture, we talked about just bringing out some random old person to announce it. Instead, the producers of the previous year's winner should be able to nominate someone involved in that movie to present the next year.
Hmm. Okay.
So you know how the acting awards, the previous year's acting award winner always presents this year's award winner? For Best Picture, they don't do that. And I get that because the people that go up for Best Picture are the producers and they're not really front of camera type of people. But they could say like, oh, we won for Moonlight. We want Mahershala Ali to go up and present next year because he's from our movie. Like, they could pick the star of their movie. They could pick whoever. Sure. But there's some continuity. So then you don't have to think about who to present it. Or, like I said, if you're going to have a host, you could have the host do it. But at least there's control over the Best Picture because it's gotten ruined twice in a decade.
I love that.
And then the last thing I guess I would say, or last two things. This year, they went back to like the ghosts of winners past presenting the acting awards. And I do not like that. It's a time suck. I don't think it adds a lot of value.
And they just gas each other out. It's just a glaze right. fest. And it's just like,
right.
we know that they're amazing, quote unquote, people. Like, they're phenomenal actors and actresses. That's why they're here tonight. The semicircle of 12 people on stage. I don't need it. I hate it.
Not to mention, if you haven't seen the movies, the what used to be the classic Oscar clip, quote unquote, might sell you on like, oh, I should check this movie out. So like, you got to go back to just, here are the nominees, show the clips from each person, and the Oscar goes to. Like, this new format is not needed. And then finally, the in memoriam. This year they did a like presentation. They had a quartet, like a string quartet. And I thought at first, I was like, oh, this is pretty good. String quartet, good song choice, in memoriam, just leave it. But then they add in interpretive dancers, they add in the full orchestra, and then two singers come up from the bottom of the stage. And it's like all distracting from the actual screen of the people that are in memoriam. Like, you do less.
You know what would be so much cooler? Open caskets and urns.
All they need to do is stick with an orchestra playing a sad song, do the montage. You're going to, because you do all these other changes that I made, you'll have more time. So you're not going to snub anybody and go full screen for the folks watching at home. That's what was always frustrating to me. I'm watching at home.
Oh, you're trying to pick out all these people.
Yeah.
These,
and instead of seeing the actual like direct footage of the montage they're showing, I'm seeing like sweeping camera moves over the seats. And I'm like trying to read the screen of who they're actually talking about. So you got to simplify that too.
Bill, listen, I'm not just saying this because we're co-hosts and you're a very good friend of mine. Every single one of those points would make this a million times better. And I don't know who you need to email or who needs to be involved. If you need to just be on a mic and just run, produce it next year, I'll sign the change.org petition right now.
Somebody get me in touch with the Academy of Motion Pictures, Arts and Sciences.
AJ and I will be in the truck.
And And I think we're ready to talk about our movies this week. In the Should I Go See It segment, we will be talking about four films: Dune Part 2, Imaginary, Kung Fu Panda 4, and Love Lies Bleeding. According to IMDb.com, Paul Atreides unites with Shani and the Fremen while seeking revenge against the conspirators who destroyed his family. Bill, should I go see it?
Yes. And preferably in IMAX, Dolby, Laser IMAX, whatever large format you have near you.
Yep.
You got to see it that way.
Yep.
As we did.
Yep.
I saw it twice that way, as a matter of fact.
He sure did. Once by himself, once with me. I felt honored to be next to him and just basking in the glory. I don't know where to start or end or like how much to go into it or like, I mean, this film is everywhere and everyone's talking about it. So where do you want to like, where do you want to start?
I don't even have that many notes because I don't even know what to say.
It's, wow.
Well, first of all, we did not get a popcorn bucket. My understanding is that they're fully sold out at this point.
I ordered one off eBay.
Oh, there you go. Smart.
I just want to see what it can do for me.
Yep. The movie is...
It said it was partially used. I hope that just butter in there and we'll find out. Okay.
Yep. The movie is beautiful. It's stunning. It's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
It might be one of the best looking movies I've ever seen.
Whoa.
I mean, the thing is, nobody is making movies like this or of this caliber. It makes everything else that I see in theaters seem like child's play. It's like just another level of filmmaking, and it's completely just remarkable. And for story wise, you know, I listened to the audiobook of Dune prior to the first film, which is helpful. And this kind of closes out that book.
Yes.
And then he is, Denis Villeneuve, the director, is currently writing a Dune Part 3, presumably based on Dune Messiah, the next book in the series. So this picks up where Dune Part 1 basically left off, small gap in time, but otherwise it picks up right from there. So definitely recommend a rewatch of Part 1 if you hadn't seen it in a while to go into this. But this, I think, is a superior film in almost every way, just in terms of the action, the pacing, the storytelling, the excitement. It's why you go to the movies. And that's why I say you got to see it on a large screen.
You know me, I'm not a big theater guy just because of like time and life and whatever. This is a film that you like. I left that theater and I was like, damn, like that is a movie going experience, like yep. Visual, sound, story, experience, packed house. I think the only empty seats were the first two rows in IMAX because you basically need like a, you know, spinal transfusion, effusion yeah. after if you saw it in there. But like it was truly incredible. And like every time where I thought it was going to get like stale, something happened or something switched, whether that was through plot or character or like visuals, where I was like pulled right back into it. And it was yep. 245, 250?
245, yep. So it is very long, but it's paced, I think, actually better than the first.
There was never a time where I was like, man, this is way too long. It was more like, I want more of this film as soon as possible.
And when you get to that Act 3 finale, so to speak, any concept of time goes out the window because you are just sucked into it and you are just along for the ride. It's that type of movie.
Yeah, and it's one of those examples too where like clearly it is great directing, but it's everything else, right? Like it is sound design, it is score, it is, you know, Craig Frazier DPing, it is the act, it's just everything works in a way that you're fully immersed in this world where you are just, you are outside of 2024 and you are in the world of Dune. And I fucking love that. I love that about movies when they can do that.
Yep. It is remarkable. And I'm just, you know, waiting for now a few years for Dune Part 3. But yeah, I mean, I think I wrote in my review that this, at this rate, this will go down potentially as the greatest sci-fi trilogy of all time. Like, how could it not?
Well, they could fall on their face with the third movie, no?
Yeah, we could talk about
not,
that.
Not knowing Denny, not...
I mean, it is... Dune 1 is great in its own right. And there's things that 1 does that 2 doesn't do. Like, the way they go off the planet and they kind of explore some stuff, but they kind of do it in two in a very small way, but it's more impactful. I liked seeing where like House Atreides came from, and I kind of like that building, because you are on Arrakis for the entire 99.9% of the film. You're on Arrakis, and I would have loved more world building and scenery from something outside of that. But where the Act Three kind of drags in Dune One, it takes. I mean, it picks up exactly where the last film left, and it moves like a fucking roller coaster from start to finish. There was one other thing I was going to say. There's a scene in that film that I don't want to spoil. Not a scene, but yeah, I mean, I guess it is a scene in that film that I don't want to spoil, that I looked at Bill afterwards and I was like, dude, that was fucking one of the sickest things I've ever seen in my entire life.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
And it was shot on an infrared camera, and it was like the coolest way to use technology to build a scene in a world that I've ever seen. And the set design, the character, like everything about it was amazing. I don't know what, like I keep on glazing this film, but like, I don't know.
There's nothing else to say. You got to see it for yourself.
Is that it? We're moving on.
Yeah. No need to dig in. Like, you just got to go see it. It's that
fucking
good.
No notes.
Not optional.
I fucking love that. Not optional. Okay. Next film is Imaginary. According to IMDb.com, a woman returns to her childhood home to discover that the imaginary friend she left behind is very real and unhappy that she abandoned him. Oh, that's a cool concept. Bill, should I go see it?
This is a Blumhouse horror movie, PG-13 horror movie. So it's already kind of cut off at the knees by that.
Yuck.
You know, my usual criteria for if I'm debating a yes or no is, did it either show me something I've never seen before, or did it execute what it did do really well? It's got to do one of those two things, or in Dune's case, both. But in this case, it just never really hit on either of those. It's a good proof of concept for the lead actress. She's very good. But the husband character was the worst I've ever seen. They have zero chemistry, and luckily they write him out of the movie most of the time. But like, it was distractingly bad. The movie's got way too much exposition. Like, it needed a lot more show and a lot less tell. Because they have, you know, some things, I mean, maybe this is just me, but for my horror tastes, I need a little more ambiguity. When they get to the point where you get the frazzled expert who knows everything about the spirit realm or whatever, like all these movies, and they just start dumping exposition of how everything you've seen in the last two acts works, like they go through it for so long. I'm like, yeah, I get it. Like, just leave a little to my imagination. Like, I don't need you to tell me every single thing in one scene. And it also was one of those movies that they set themselves up for a potentially really interesting and bold ending that I was gonna like almost redeemed it to a degree, but then they chicken out and they don't do it. Similar to Toy Story 3 in that way. But
you just compare a horror movie to Toy Story 3?
Well, yeah. Remember in Toy Story 3 when they're in the incinerator and they all hold hands and accept death, and you think to yourself, oh my God, they're going to kill these characters and it's going to teach the children a valuable lesson that nothing lasts forever. But then they get saved at the last second. Anyway,
yeah.
Bothers me. Still bothers me.
But just watch any other Pixar movie and someone else is going to die.
Yeah,
so
good
I guess.
Point. Good point.
Yeah.
But anyway, if I were gonna give any positives on this movie, I will say there is a reveal. There's like a midway through reveal I thought was done really well. There's a couple jump scares that got me. And as I mentioned, the lead is good in it. But that's basically it. It's not a go to the theater type of movie.
Who's her imaginary friend?
What do you mean?
Like, what is it? Like a pet rock?
No, it's imaginary, so it's like it's invisible, but it's in the form of a stuffed bear for most of the movie.
Oh, what? Huh? Wouldn't that just be a stuffy?
Yeah, but they use that as like a placeholder for the imaginary friend, so to speak.
Oh, I don't like it. Okay, well, it's a trash film. No one should watch it. Okay, speaking of bears, Kung Fu Panda 4, Skadoosh. According to IMDb.com, after Po is tapped to become the spiritual leader of the Valley of Peace, he needs to find and train a new dragon warrior while a wicked sorceress plans to resummon all the master villains whom Poe has vanquished to the spirit realm. Bill, should I go see it?
No.
No.
I will say, though, during the ending credits, Jack Black sings a cover of Hit Me Baby One More Time, and that almost makes it worth it.
Oh, that, is that why that was going viral, like on the all the red carpets where people were like, Jack, sing it. Sing Britney Spears.
Oh, probably. That's why. Gotta be. Oh, okay. Gotta be.
Yeah, right. I saw a live action video of him floating around the internet doing that. So I guess
that was pretty cool. I mean, Jack Black's great, obviously.
Obviously.
The movie's not that great. It's not as chock full of laughs as it should be. Like, the most laughter I got out of it was from Ian McShane, just because his voice is so great. There's a few good sight gags. Visually, it looks okay. The music's pretty good. Zimmer does the score, and it's pretty good. They also have an orchestrated version of Crazy Train during one of the chase scenes, which I thought was a clever touch. And Viola Davis, like, hams it up as the villain. And so that's kind of neat because she's great.
Yeah. So what's the problem? I mean, you just named 35 things that were great.
Yeah, there are a couple good things, but it doesn't do anything the others haven't. And the story is super predictable and bland. They waste a lot of time on a B-plot with Poe's dads. They don't include the Furious Five gang. None of them are in it. So the entire movie is just Jack Black and, in this case, Awkwafina as, like, his co-lead. And Awkwafina plays the same type of character that she has in, like, a zillion other movies recently, including other animated ones where she's, like, the spunky friend. And don't get me wrong, like, I think she's extremely talented. I thought in the movie The Farewell, she gives a remarkable performance. She was great in Crazy Rich Asians. Like, I love Awkwafina, but I'm just kind of over this particular version of her shtick. And I want her to do more dramatic stuff like The Farewell because I think she's great. She's kind of got pigeonholed now into this thing, and it just doesn't do it for me.
Wow.
So the movie was just kind of
also
blah.
Crazy to think it's been 8 years since the last Kung Fu Panda movie. They should have just let it die.
Yeah, that's one of the other things I've been reading about are, is like, why bring it back? It already did well as a trilogy. There are a bunch of spinoffs and, like, direct to DVD type stuff for it. Like, it's a popular franchise. I get it, but, like, not rebooting, but bringing it back 8 years later just kind of seems odd.
Well, you want me to tell you why?
Money.
Yeah, budget was $85 million and gross worldwide on weekend one was $99 million.
Yeah, so it's on pace to do plenty for them.
Yeah, like, they're going to get their money back and more, so...
Yeah, but it didn't do much for me. I mean, I loved the original, and I'm pretty sure I liked two. I don't even know if I saw three, but this one, not so much. Falls flat.
Okay. The last film is Love Lies Bleeding, according to IMDb.com. Gym manager Lou falls for Jackie, a bodybuilder who is passing through town en route to a competition in Las Vegas. Bill, this looks strangely erotic. Is it?
Yes to that question, and yes to your normal question.
Fuck
should
yeah.
I see it?
Double yabo. Okay.
So it's from A24, and it definitely has that distinct vibe and weirdness that they shoot for. It's an 80s noir love story. 89, specifically, 1989. They do place it there. Kristen Stewart plays a desk clerk at a gym. Her father is Ed Harris, who runs a gun range. They have a haunted past. And then, as you mentioned, a female bodybuilder played by Katie O'Brien gets caught in the tangle of their lives because she gets a job at the gun range and then also ends up falling for Kristen after working out at the gym. And then Kristen Stewart introduces her to steroids, which, as you can imagine, becomes a complication.
Fuck yeah. Katie O'Brien is jacked in this, too.
Yoked out of her mind. It's unreal.
Good for her.
I mean, she's a bodybuilder in the movie, and that's a big part of it. I assume she's got to be a bodybuilder in real life, or at least was for this movie.
Or at least got super jacked, yeah.
So anyway, all their lives start to intersect. Things happen, things escalate. Your classic violent noir type shit. Overall, I dug it. I mean, there's some great scenes, some cool visuals. Performances are all great. It did feel a little slow at times, like it could have maybe been tightened. After I wrote my review, I read a couple other reviews just to see if other people were on the same page. And actually, one of the review I read noted the same exact thing. They mentioned it's because they use the same locations repeatedly, which is what makes it feel like it drags a little bit because there isn't as much freshness scene to scene, which I hadn't thought of, but subliminally, that definitely could be it. And then the only other thing I would say, as different and interesting as the setup is, the twists and turns are kind of generic noir stuff. One or two things I kind of predicted and saw coming, so that was a bit of a letdown. But overall, it's still a rad little movie.
I love that. And I love that Kristen Stewart's kind of like, she's just leaning into who she is now. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, she's like taking all kinds of projects.
Yeah, I fucking love that. Good for her. Good for this film. A24, we love them. Everything about it.
They always make interesting things. It's different than anything else I have seen lately, which that in and of itself makes it feel like it's worthy of the yes.
I might have to do a double feature of Iron Claw and then follow up with Love Lies Bleeding.
Yeah, good call. Good call.
And then,
definitely have to watch Iron Claw. Come on.
I know. I've been waiting for it to come out on rental. I think it came out this week.
And then just a bunch of old WWF VHSs you got.
And then I'm just going to oil myself up and just start like running through tables.
They were in town recently. WWE was at the Garden this weekend. You missed out. I think so.
I would have loved. We should. Wow. You know what? Next time we should go to that.
It'd
be a blast. All right, Bill. Netflix and Bill. Your segment. Get your name in it. What are you watching?
Two things. One other movie that I did post a review for because it is a feature film, but it was a Netflix original, so I'll put it in the Netflix and Bill segment.
I'll let it slide.
That's called Damsel. I gave it a no. It's a fantasy movie with Millie Bobby Brown. And
what's her fucking deal?
What about?
I didn't. Well, first of all, that came off very hot and very aggressive.
Yeah, slow down. She's a talented young lady.
I just feel like she can't find her footing outside of Stranger Things. Everything she's been in outside of that TV show has just not been good.
Yeah, I mean, she's trying.
And is she doing it just... I know, but like, is she doing it because she needs a break, or is she doing it because she actually like wants to be part of the project? Or she just needs to be that far away from Stranger Things where like she'll take anything?
I don't know. I mean, she's usually pretty good. Like, she's not bad in this. It's usually the projects that she's in are the tough issue. The problem with this movie, it's a fantasy, but my issue is, how do you make with Netflix money, how do you make an original film, a big budget, original high profile film for Netflix, and your dragon looks barely as good as one from a 10-year-old episode of Game of Thrones? Like, what are we doing here?
They used all that money on that Millie Bobby Brown.
Probably.
Cash.
It's not very good. It's just kind of goofy. The dragon talks, which is never great. Everything looks like it's shot on the volume. All the effects don't look that good. Most of the movie is like her in a cave. It's almost like torture porn at times, just her like running away and getting hurt and screaming. It's like, it's not good. It's not great.
Okay.
Didn't care for it. So that's a no. And then the only other thing I'm watching for Netflix and Bill today, as of this recording, the part two of season two of Invincible on Amazon has begun, the animated show. So they split season two into parts for whatever reason. So it's been like a couple months, and the newest episode just came out today, which I watched and was very good. I love that show.
So is this once he's on the Eagles? Because the first part was just about the tryout.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Yes. Exactly. Yep.
Classic Invincible joke.
You got it, Craig. Yep.
Yuck. Yuck. Yuck.
No, I haven't. My wife's been watching that. Love is Blind show.
Popular show. Popular show.
Very popular. I'll peek in and out watching it. It's one of the dumbest things I've ever seen in my entire life. But that's how they get their money. That's how they get their viewership. Is with fucking trash TV. Trash TV and shitty straight-to-DVD movies now. Netflix.
And they're not even reinvesting the cash into good dragons.
No. Lackluster dragons.
They're taking
even.
That money. They should be putting it back in the business in dragons, but they're not.
Nope.
So shame on them.
Shame.
Shame.
Greg, you watch anything?
I'm a little between stuff right now. Like I said, I've been kind of just like cruising the free Apple TV movies, just kind of grazing on some fun stuff I've already seen. So I'm open for recommendations, fellas. I got to find my way to get to Dune. I got to get to Dune too. I'm going to do my best, which is only slightly better than my worst.
I'm still watching Shogun and The Dynasty. Those are the two things that are still airing.
Oh,
live.
Yeah. The Dynasty, of course.
Dynasty, yeah.
Still good.
I'm behind on Shogun, but I'm going to try to catch up this weekend.
Guys, you need tickets?
Huh? Bill, what do you get tickets for? Tickets here.
Tickets buying, selling.
I got fucking tickets.
I have tickets to see Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire.
A Top of the Monster.
So Immaculate, the Sydney Sweeney horror movie. And then I have a ticket to see Monkey Man, which is Dev Patel's directorial debut. Which
you got the shit kicked out of him.
Those trailers look sick.
Yeah. And I believe that also played at South by Southwest to roaring ovations.
Standing ovation.
Yeah. So I'm excited for that one.
Should we make that a fucking a Sigsy company special?
Should we go to Monkey Man together?
You want to see a Monkey Man with me?
I think we should do it. Tickets hit.
I'll bring the Dune bucket. Tickets hit.
Craig, I thought you were going to say the trailers look scary or something.
We can pass around the Dune bucket. The three of us will hang out, watch some fucking street fights in Delhi.
Wow.
Sounds great.
Sounds like my eighth grade Saturday nights all over again. Bill, take us out.
Thank you for listening to the Should I Go See It podcast. Please make sure to buy your tickets for the Should I Go See It 1K live event extravaganza.
8 left.
Follow on Instagram @Should I Go See It. Link in the bio for tickets. Thanks for listening.